Professor, you said something earlier about the weakness of gravity.
I did.
And so what do you mean?
Well, I'm talking about the weakness of gravity relative to the other forces that we know about. A very physical manifestation of this. Well, just the fact that you can pick up your arm or jump up means that you can compete against the entire force of gravity of the entire Earth, or the fact that a magnet can pick up a paperclip. A tiny magnet can compete against the entire Earth. If you just had fundamental particles and asked about the relative strength of their gravitational attraction,
yes,
versus the electromagnetic interaction, it's completely negligible. As particle physicists, we never worry about it. It's just orders of magnitude smaller. So it's so many orders of magnitude smaller in fundamental strength. It's like the number of times you could put peanuts together in a galaxy. It's a huge number. And what is the origin of this enormous discrepancy between the strengths of the forces is a question we would like to answer. We'd like to explain why gravity is so weak relative to the other forces. And it's an even worse problem than it sounds like. It's not just a question of why do these two extraordinarily different numbers enter. But the question is, when we actually combine together the principles of quantum mechanics and special relativity and work out the consequences, we find the theory wants to make them about the same. You have to put in an enormous fudge, what we call a fine-tuning, into the standard model to get the results that we know have to be right. So we know that there has to be something underlying this. This can't be all there is. So we want to know, what is the theory that underlies that and explains the weakness of gravity? Could it be extra dimensions?
You, of course, believe that gravity is a function of mass, right?
It's mass and energy, momentum.
Energy and momentum.
Yes, Einstein told us that energy, momentum, mass, that's basically what E equals MC squared is about. It's the fact that mass or energy gives you this gravitational field.
Huh. So you could have a smaller object, like a pulsar, for example, rotating very, very, very quickly, and it would have additional gravity.
Well, pulsars aren't necessarily small, but just the fact that light experiences gravity, the fact that light bends in a gravitational field of a star or whatever, the fact that light bends is telling you that light doesn't have mass, but light does carry energy. So it's that energy that is responding
right
to the gravitational field.
Right. Right. So even light, yes, and it does indeed bend, doesn't it?
It does, and we've seen lots of evidence for it now. We see multiple images of objects because as light goes around a star, it produces different images because it's bending. So we really do see this. It's quite amazing.
So then light would have to... Could you say that light would have some gravitational effect of its own?
Indeed it does. Anything that experiences gravity is also affecting
gravity.
The gravitational field.
Yes,
in the example I gave, I was considering one light ray bending around an enormous star. So that's why the star's gravitational field was more important. But certainly light can create its own gravity if it carries energy. Anything that carries energy affects the gravitational field, yeah.
Wow, I'm trying to digest that.
Yeah, that's what Einstein taught us. He taught us a lot of things.
it's really hard to digest. but then so is the whole world we live in, the whole universe we live in.
Some days more than others.
Yes. So do you get to sit around and theorize about all this kind of thing, or do you actually do lab experiments?
I do only theory. I might suggest experiments for other people to test some of these ideas, or I might interpret the results of experiments to see whether some of these theories are correct. But I am just doing theory. There's an enormous number of experimenters out there who work on these collider experiments, and they're doing the hard work to actually extrapolate the data.
All right. What is an LHC particle collider?
So one of the important experiments for us, the one that's going to address the question of the weakness of gravity that we were just talking about, and also tell us how fundamental particles acquire their mass. Where is their mass coming from? It's something called the Large Hadron Collider, the LHC. It's an enormous, it's 27 kilometers in circumference. It's going to accelerate together protons and bang them together. And it's going to, when those protons collide together, you can get things inside that annihilate, create an enormous amount of energy. And then because there's an enormous amount of energy, it can create heavy particles. After all, E equals MC squared, which tells us that to make heavy particles, particles with big mass M, we need a lot of energy. So when these in this collider, what will happen is protons will collide together, create an enormous amount of energy, and that in turn can create heavy particles, which we can use to test what is giving particles their mass. Some of your listeners might have heard of the Higgs boson, and that's something associated with giving particles mass. But we want to understand this question of the weakness of gravity, which can involve much more exotic phenomena like extra dimensions of space or an exotic symmetry called supersymmetry. So there are some pretty interesting possibilities for what the Large Hadron Collider might find. And it's going to turn on next year. It'll really start operating at full speed about a year later. But pretty soon we're going to know some answers.
Do you think that physics will ever produce, or could conceivably ever produce, a way to move through time, either forward or reverse?
Well, I think we all know how to move forward through time.
Yes.
We do so faster than we want to be.
Yes.
Reversing it is, you know, again, probably the most skeptical guest you've had. But it's really hard to figure out how to do that and make it match onto our world. When we work out the consequence of physical laws, we can sort of understand what we would in principle need to get backwards travel in time or circular travel in time.
Oh.
We just don't seem to be able to get that and connect it to the world that we live in. It doesn't seem to be possible. We don't know how to make any logical sense of it.
Well, of course, when I said forward in time, I meant at a speed greater than we currently are all moving. And is there
any... can warp time. I mean, time can be measured differently in different places. The overall scale of time can indeed change. In fact, in this warp geometry that the title of my book refers to, time is measured different ways in different places in the extra dimension. So you can find different phenomena.
Exactly.
But it's... not necessarily observable.
Well, again, is there, for example, some difference in the way a theoretical physicist thinks about moving forward in time and back in time, the level of difficulty?
No one knows how to go back in time. So there's an enormous amount of difficulty. No one has a theory that lets us go back in time.
And to speed up in faster than we're now moving?
So when you talk about moving, you're talking about not just time, but you're talking about speed. You're talking about how we move through space as a function of time.
Yes.
And so we're moving at the rate we are. It could be that is accelerating. In fact, the expansion of the universe is accelerating. If you're asking, will the speed of light be different? That has to do with phenomena like, are the symmetries we think are present really there? But you could imagine the universe accelerating, and indeed, we do seem to see the expansion of the universe is accelerating at this point.